Well, what you have to do is look at what That's Life did. It was a dramatised script.
Yes.
So all the time, they were actually saying the words of the viewer who had the problem with the washing machine, or the crook who was trying to explain
it
what...
It was quite arch at times, didn't it?
But they were being those people. We didn't have film interviews with people. It was an incredibly economical way of telling complex stories.
Yes.
So what they did was represent other people. And then they went off and they did films and they did other things as themselves. But so what... It's a bit unfair to say they as personalities didn't come out that way.
Okay, well, last thing on that then. As I say, it worked, and if it ain't broke, don't mend it. But if they came in and said, this pun stinks, I'm not doing this pun tonight, was that don't broke, don't mend it? Was that the rule? Do the pun.
Absolutely not.
No?
Absolutely not.
Then why did they do some of them puns? Really? I mean, it's the same.
Why do we all make the jokes we make?
I suppose so.
We think they're funny. We hope they're funny.
Despite all your triumphs, your show will still be remembered as a cosy show, okay? But have you ever actually been in danger yourself, actual danger?
The only time I've ever got into problems was in early days when we were exposing a lot of double-glazing salesmen. And there was once we found ourselves with quite a heavy mob because it was an East End gang who were laundering money via these home improvement schemes, central heating, double glazing.
Yeah.
And the day after we transmitted, a detective came into my office and said, well, you're going to end up in a concrete overcoat in the Hackney Marshes.
The detective said this?
Yeah.
Did you ever get threatened? Did you get on the...
Yes. Double glazing salesman again rang up the BBC and said, oh, I know where that Ranson works, and I'm going to wait. When she comes in, I'm going to push her teeth straight down her throat.
What?
And you know how the BBC faithfully records everything?
Yeah, they actually give you those notes. Notes for you, by the way.
There's a lady saying, oh, yes, sir, please, can you... Anyway, so I got a copy of the duty log the next day, and I went straight to my head of department and said, now can I park my car in the car park?
Because, yeah.
And for that series, I could.
It shouldn't surprise me, but it does. You've done a pantomime, right?
I did do a panto. I played Dick Whittington.
Yeah, me too. Not Dick, no, I played Idle Jack.
Ah!
I think we could get together on something like this, but anyway, so yeah. Idle Jack, yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. It was great fun. Except that I was the name, I was the television name, and all the other people have a talent, you see. I don't know if you've heard me sing. but the principal girl, who had a beautiful voice, sang a duet with me.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it's a duet from Hans Christian Andersen. Anyway, on the third night, she completely lost her voice, so I had to sing her part as well as mine.
Mm.
And it went like this. No two people have ever been so in bin, so in bin, so in bin, so in bin, so in bin. It's incredible. No two people have ever been so in bin, so with my lovey dove. And this is a tune.
Yes, come on, give it up. That's the voice. You said you couldn't sing. Hey, that's the voice. Yeah, it was very
Elvis, you're not one of
them. Okay, we're going to fill. Don't Elvis, just tell us. And you actually sang it?
Yes,
both
it was
parts.
Dreadful. I had to sing both parts, and then I expired in the middle of the stage.
Yeah.
And there was the lady with the beautiful voice and the frog in her throat who couldn't join in.
It's Panto's loss, that I'm saying. Thank God there's still one or two outposts, he said ironically, in television for Esther Ranson right there. Thank you very much.